at the letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's at the letters for Wednesday, August 31st, Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I am not joined in studio today by my co-host Ben Nicholson-Smith. He is in Baltimore, but he will be joining us over the phone to recap everything that's going on with the team out there. And we'll talk to Yannick Navarro. We'll talk September call-ups. Who knows what else we'll talk about. We'll talk about plenty of stuff. And then in the back half of the show, we'll be joined by Dalton Pompey, outfielder for the Buffalo Bisons, a guy who was on the Blue Jays playoff roster last year, a guy who could be looking at a September call-up in the next few days. So check in on him, talk to him about his season, where he's at, and you know, there'll be plenty of interesting stuff in there for sure. This is At the Letters, obviously. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. Do all that good stuff. You can get me on Twitter. I'm at Arden Zwelling. Ben's on Twitter at BNicholson-Smith. Our producer, Sam McKee, he's on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. Without further ado, we continue with the podcast. We'll be joined after this by Ben Nicholson-Smith from Baltimore.
Wieters batting left-handed. It's a fly ball deep right field. Backcourt, Michael Saunders. He's at the track. He looks up. It's gone. It's a standing room only. And Zach Britton's going to come on with a 5-3 lead at this point in the game.
It's At the Letters, Arden Zwelling on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Pleased to be joined over the phone from Baltimore by my co-host Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, how are things at Camden Yards?
Things are good. I'm pretty close to Camden Yards, which is nice. I can actually see it right now. So keep an eye on things. I'll let you know if there are any unexpected developments on the field or anything like that. But yeah, things are good.
You can overlook any potential riots. That's good.
Yeah, you never know what might happen.
You never know. One thing that's happened in Baltimore is the return of one Yannick Navarro, a personal favorite of both yours and mine. What's the scene like as Yannick Navarro returns to the Blue Jays?
Well, you know, as you well know, he's beloved by his teammates. And so it was kind of fun to see him return and get tons of greetings. And I think that, as far as I can tell, his teammates seem genuinely excited to have him back. And it's an interesting turn of events for Navarro, because the reason that he signed with the White Sox in the first place was to get more playing time. Now he's going to be in a backup role, but he seems pretty happy to be essentially filling in the gaps where the Blue Jays need them.
Absolutely. And, you know, he didn't really have that everyday role with Chicago earlier on in the year. He kind of picked it up in July, and then in August he was being used sparingly again. You know, I can't imagine things went the way he felt they were going to go in Chicago. And he's obviously not having a great year at the dish, but, you know, I do wonder about, you know, you see Jason Grilley coming over for, you know, and he was performing poorly on a bad team. He comes over to Toronto and he's lights out. Same thing with Joaquin Benoit. I wonder if something similar can happen with Yannick Navarro.
Yeah, I think at the very least the Blue Jays will be able to, you know, to use the cliche, they'll be able to put him in situations where he succeeds. And so I think that offensively that probably means more at-bats against left-handed pitching, and he does really well against lefties. So that could allow him to put up some better numbers as opposed to being in there every single day. And even though he's a switch hitter, he's someone who doesn't typically do all that well against right-handed pitching. So I think that is one way that the Blue Jays can mix him in. And he's someone who knows the staff pretty well, which is really hard to find mid-season, especially if you're talking about catchers. I mean, to go out and say, for argument's sake, Kurt Suzuki, just to pick the name of a catcher whose name was out there this month. I mean, can you imagine the difference between his knowledge of the Blue Jays pitching and Navarro's? I would think it would be pretty substantial.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, just, you know, Yannick having worked with these guys last year, you know, if you look at Yannick's splits, just to reinforce your point, a career 7.67 OPS against lefties and a career 6.51 OPS against righties. So that's a pretty considerable difference there, you know, especially when you're considering it's, you know, a switch hitter. But yeah, I think, you know, if anything, it just doesn't hurt the Blue Jays. You know, it's another one of these moves that, you know, where the Blue Jays really don't give up anything of substance. You know, it's kind of a minor leaguer who's you know, 25, 26, advanced guy who's probably not going to be helping your team anytime soon. You give away nothing to add a guy who, at the very least, you know, while I think that fans need to have a bit of a reality check about what kind of bat D'Angelo Navarro is, you know, he's not gonna be Babe Ruth out there or anything, but at the very least, he can be helpful with your pitching staff. Even a guy who, when he's on the bench, you know, catchers just notice things. Having another catcher around is never a bad thing because they pick up tendencies and things that are happening in the game that maybe other players aren't.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And I think it's interesting with Navarro where he fits in this trend of a lot of the Blue Jays acquisitions this year where you have Jason Grilley, who's in his late 30s, and Joaquin Benoit, who's in his late 30s. Even Melvin Upton is very experienced. Scott Feldman. I mean, you look up and down the roster at the guys that they've added, and all of a sudden you've got, I think it's baseball's oldest team. And you wonder, mm-hmm. I mean, at this point in the season with just 1 month to go, you can probably get away with it. But I do think that there's something to monitor, especially when it comes to those relievers, because they've been using guys like Grilley and Benoit so much.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, Grilley and Benoit, you can't take anything away from them. They've been so good. You know, you look at last night, Jason Grilley gives up a two-run shot to lose the game, and it was so surprising because it's like, well, you know, Jason Grilley has just been so reliable since he came over. Does there need to be a concern about the number of bullets that these guys have left, being 39-year-olds who have been used an awful lot this year?
I think there has to be, and I think that Jason Grilley remains a really, really effective reliever. I mean, you don't strike out 40% of the hitters that you face by accident, and he's right up there with the Andrew Millers and Zach Britton's of the world when it comes to strikeout rate and opponent's average allowed and really some of those metrics that you look at with a relief pitcher. So I'm a believer that Jason Grilley is going to be a difference-making reliever for this club down the stretch. But to make that happen, I think the Blue Jays need to be watching his workload. They need to be watching the number of times he gets hot in the bullpen and enters the game, the number of times that he's throwing sides, the number of times that he's actually in games. And the Blue Jays are doing that. I mean, that's something that they keep track of, something that I think a lot of teams keep track of. They know when their guys are getting up in the bullpen. But, you know, I think you'd probably want to err on the side of caution. And so, you know, with both of these guys, I think that if you're going to be relying on them for another 2 months from this point on, you've got to be pretty careful, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, clearly still live arms, and especially Benoit impresses me with what he has in his arm. And you know, when the Blue Jays got him, I remember, you know, guys like Gibby and Ross Atkins were kind of saying, well, you know, look, we know he hasn't been doing great, you know, he's been struggling, and we know he's old, but he's still got a hell of an arm. And you're kind of like, oh, well, is this just kind of organizational spin, what's going on here? And then you see him in the game and it's like, yeah, the ball comes out of his hand really well and it moves a ton and he gets a lot of swing and miss, and he can really do what he wants to. So, you know, that's what's encouraging. You mentioned Grilley's strikeout numbers. He's got a K per nine of almost 13. It's amazing. So, you know, I think that's what's encouraging. But yeah, you know, I do wonder. I mean, it would just be so much better if Brett Cecil was Brett Cecil right now, because I think that would just help out this bullpen just demonstratively. And I think that you'd feel a lot better about this group going forward if Brett Cecil was reliable.
Yeah, I think you really would, because then if you're facing the big left-handed sluggers in the American League East, then you have an answer. And right now they're hoping that whether it's Biagini or Benoit or Grilley, that those guys can allow them to bridge the gap. And for the most part, it's working. But I think that you would have to feel a lot more comfortable if you had Brett Cecil pitching at his best. But pretty clear that's not happening. They still have time. I mean, it's kind of a weird time in the season where you do have 30 games remaining, and that's enough time to get a read on Brett Cecil. It's enough time for him to reestablish himself closer to where he was last year, and I'm sure the Blue Jays are hoping that happens. But I also think, you know, with today being the final day for teams to add players with playoff eligibility, I think they should be on the lookout for left-handed relief, because A, you need it right now. B, you look ahead to next season, you know you're going to need two left-handed relievers. Cecil's a free agent. Aaron Loop you can't rely on. Beyond that, you don't have a lot of options. So I think it's a long-term organizational need as well.
We've been harping on this for what feels like months, the need of, another high-leverage left-handed reliever in that bullpen, and we were talking about it at the last trade deadline. And so, you know, it's so hard to make trades right now because you have to be so aggressive. And, you know, if you want to get a guy who's legit, you have to generally be the team that claims them, because, you know, anybody who's really, really good will likely get claimed if they're put out on waivers. They're not likely to pass through. I feel like it is pretty, the odds are pretty long that the Blue Jays get something done today. What's your read?
Yeah, I think they've already made their moves of substance. I mean, you just look around, or you look back at recent years and what gets done on August 31st, typically you're not talking big names, and that's why you're much more likely to see the Cliff Penningtons of the world change teams at this time of year than you are, you know, I mean, Adrian Gonzalez, yeah, he was traded in August a few years back, but that's really the exception. There's a reason that trade stands out in our minds. And for the most part, if you're talking about August trades, it's either bad money or bad players. I mean, role players, guys who aren't going to make a huge difference, or guys who are having disappointing seasons and who are available for a reason. So I think for the most part, this Blue Jays team is the one that we're going to be seeing down the stretch. And really, it's going to be a question of how they use the pieces that they do have.
So what a lot of people look to when they're thinking about, well, okay, we're going to need a lefty in the bullpen for the postseason. A lot of people look to Francisco Liriano as maybe somebody who can fill that role. And, you know, obviously this is so premature. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. There could be injuries. There could be, you know, poor performance that changes people's minds, this and that and the other. But, I mean, I wonder, how do you feel about, you know, if Francisco Liriano did fill that role as a lefty reliever in the postseason, a guy who, you know, hasn't pitched as a reliever? I can't imagine last time he did. It must have been really early in his career.
Yeah, it's a weird fit, and I think the Blue Jays would need to have a couple questions answered before feeling entirely comfortable with that idea. First of all, Liriano doesn't throw a ton of strikes, and I think if you're imagining a scenario in late September or October where you really need someone to come in and get you out of a jam, ideally you want someone who's going to get in and get out and not walk batters and not hit batters and not complicate things. And Liriano's pitching approach is simply not in line with that. I mean, he throws pitches that are really tough to hit. Part of the reason they're tough to hit is they're on the edges of the strike zone. Sometimes they're even out of the strike zone. He gets batters to expand their zone, but it leads to a lot of walks. So I'm not sure if you're entirely comfortable with that. And then there's also the challenge that you mentioned, where if this is a guy who has started predominantly for really the bulk of his career, then I'm not sure how easy that transition would be. And maybe you're just better off hoping that Brett Cecil can be that answer as your left-handed late-inning reliever.
It's really the one area that you're concerned about, I think, with the Toronto Blue Jays right now. Like, for me, really, you know, you feel good about the starting pitching, you know, around the diamond. They've obviously got strong offensive contributors and good defenders, and the offense has really kind of been rounding into form lately. To me, the bullpen is kind of the weak link, if there is one. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, I think elements of the bullpen, for sure, where you've got that gap, as we've talked about, with lefty relievers. I think with Asuna and Grilly, that's pretty high up there as far as the better relievers that you're going to find on contending teams. I mean, it's probably not quite up there with Andrew Miller. It's probably not quite up there with Brock and Britton, but it's probably better than what the Rangers have as a 1-2. It's definitely better than what the Red Sox have. So I think that at least with the very best guys in the Blue Jays bullpen, they would stand up pretty well with most of the contending teams.
How do you feel about the offense right now? It's been an inconsistent year, I would say, for the Blue Jays offense. It's kind of sputtered at times. It's looked great at times. It looked like it was kind of rounding into form, but, you know, I don't know. Ubaldo Jimenez comes out and is able to nullify it. How do you feel about where the Blue Jays bats are right now?
I think they're pretty good, and I think that for the most part, you've got health, which is probably the biggest variable for teams, especially veteran teams this time of year. So from that perspective, they're pretty well positioned. And even if you just look at something as simple as the runs scored, I mean, they're second in the American League in runs, and that's the product of a team that's really talented. I think that they should be one of the best offensive teams. I don't think they're as good as Boston. I think Boston's pretty clearly the best offensive team in baseball, but probably the fact that the Blue Jays were, the best offense in franchise history, one of the best offenses in franchise history last year, I wonder how much that colors our perception of the way this year's team is scoring, just because they were bound to fall back to earth a little bit.
Would you, and you brought up some of the, other teams that are in the mix right now. I mean, I would kind of make a case that the competition in the American League this year is better than it was last year. You saw Texas really, really reinforce it at the trade deadline. You know, Cleveland is really, really good. I mean, Houston's still a good team if they can find their way into this mix. I mean, you look at last year where, you had the Yankees in the playoffs who were okay. I mean, Kansas City, sure, they won a World Series, but they weren't, it wasn't a really imposing team. Would you say that the competition this year is just a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a bit tougher?
Yeah, I think that there's something to that, and especially in the American League East where you've just got a lot of depth. I mean, for the Rays to be clearly the worst team in the division, and yet they've got a pretty good rotation. I mean, they've got some good pieces on offense. When they're healthy, it's not like they're a bad team. So at least they're not a bad team in the way that the Reds or the Braves or the Padres are bad teams. They've actually got some talent. And so I think that probably highlights the fact that the American League is a deep division. The American League East is a very talented division. And so for the Blue Jays to be at the top right now is, it says something about the talent that they have. And I think that it's so tricky when you look at Boston and Baltimore and try to project ahead. I mean, to me, the Red Sox are going to be in this to the end. And I guess you can't entirely write off the Orioles, because as much as we've been expecting them to disappear, they keep playing reasonably competitive baseball, and they are in a playoff spot, which in theory could allow them to, they win a wild card game, a couple things go right, and all of a sudden they could be a serious threat in the playoffs.
Oh, get hot at the right time. And, that's the scary thing, I think, for Blue Jays fans with Boston, is that if Boston goes into the playoffs, whether they win the AL East or whether they're a wild card team or whatever, I mean, if that team gets hot for a span of 10 to 15 games, like, they could win a World Series very, very realistically.
Yeah, and I think that you look at teams like the Indians, and they haven't played their best baseball of late, but, to your point earlier, I think that the Indians are a really talented team and someone to watch out for if their starting pitching gets hot. And you look at the Rangers, they've just got so much offensive depth, and with guys like Darvish and Hamels in their rotation, they're probably stronger than they were last year, because last year this time they didn't have Yu Darvish. I mean, that's a pretty big upgrade from year to year. They didn't have Carlos Beltran or Jonathan Lucroy. So if you're comparing even with that one team, that would suggest that it's a stronger club than they were this time 12 months ago.
Yeah, we were talking about the bats earlier, and just as I just kind of realizing this now, when there was a point where when Jose Bautista came back, and when Devin Travis kind of got over his little finger injury, that John Gibbons was saying, yeah, we're going to get Travis back up to the top of the order. We're going to get him back up there and, get to, more of what we were trying to do with Travis as a leadoff guy. Well, you look at the last four games of Travis back, he's been hitting 8th and 9th, and Bautista, ever since he's returned, has been locked into that leadoff spot. Do you feel like this is what we're going to be looking at going forward, that this kind of batting order that the Blue Jays have trotted out there, these two games in Baltimore, that's pretty much where John Gibbons has settled?
I think it's going to be the batting order for the finale in Baltimore, and maybe the first couple games in Tampa. But I think if we've seen anything from Gibby, it's that he's going to change things up. I mean, pretty much constantly. And according to who's healthy, according to who's playing well, I don't think that I would have predicted Russell Martin in the cleanup spot. I wouldn't even have predicted Jose Bautista in the leadoff spot if we had been discussing Blue Jays lineup options at the beginning of the season. So I'm hesitant to say that this is the way it's going to be for the Blue Jays, but I think that when it comes to not only the lineup, but also the way that they organize their bullpen, even the rotation, I mean, the Blue Jays are not a team that's going to pick one way of doing things and just stick with that. I mean, I think that for the most part this year, we've seen a lot of juggling on the fly. Sometimes it's sometimes it's worked out, sometimes it hasn't, but they seem to switch things up pretty regularly.
Is Bautista in the leadoff spot? Do you think that this is the best construction for the Blue Jays right now? I'm a fan of it. I like it. You know, I think that even Devin Travis just being, you know, hitting ninth, it's, you know, that's a guy with great contact skills, a guy who's going to get on base. You know, and when you turn that lineup over, if you have Devin Travis getting on base for Bautista, Donaldson, and Encarnacion, that's a pretty nice look. But how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it works in the sense that you end up with Bautista, Donaldson, Encarnacion, Martin, Tulowitzki. Just stacking the order with those guys makes it really tough on opponents. And I think that it allows the Blue Jays to get lots of at-bats for their best hitters. So in that sense, I like it. I think that Devin Travis is better than the Blue Jays' ninth best hitter. I mean, he's maybe, what, their sixth, seventh best hitter, something like that. So I might be tempted to move him up, even if it's to the sixth or seventh spot, just to get him a few more at-bats in the course of the season. But that's probably, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty small tweak to what they've been doing.
It's such a good problem to have, right? To have to be like, wow, where are we going to put, you know, Devin Travis, this guy with great contact skills who's, you know, going to do a lot of great things for us. Like, we have too many good hitters clogging up our batting order. Where are we going to put him?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Devin Travis would probably lead off or hit second or hit fifth or third for at least half the teams in baseball. Yeah. I think that he would be in a much more prominent batting order position than for any team except for maybe the Blue Jays, Rangers, Red Sox, Cubs. I mean, if you take those elite teams offensively out of the mix, he's probably in a really prominent spot.
The Blue Jays obviously going to be looking to add some reinforcements in the coming days. You know, the rosters expand tomorrow, but the Bison still have a handful more games. So, you might see a couple guys come up on the first and then some more coming up on, I think it's the fifth or the sixth when the Bison season is done. But who are you expecting to see?
I think it'll start with pitching. And so I see them taking Tapera. I think the Bouchaltz, who's probably going to be option for Sanchez, would be back within short order as well. And I think they add a lefty, a second lefty of some kind, whether that's Gerardo or Loop or someone in a trade. So that's the pitching front. Does that kind of line up the way you see things on the pitching side?
I wonder about Mike Bulsinger. I wonder if we might see him. What do you think?
Danny Barnes, too.
Yeah, Danny Barnes, a guy who was up. You know,
yeah, so those guys could be fit.
And, you know, maybe you get both Gerardo and Loop, or maybe, you know, maybe you get one of them on the first and the other one also comes up on, you know, the fifth or sixth.
Yeah, and I think that they'll do things in a couple waves. I do think you probably want a third catcher at some point, and I would expect that that's Josh Tolley just because he's a free agent. And obviously, speaking of guys who know the pitching staff, I mean, he makes sense from that standpoint. And then outfield and infield is where it gets kind of interesting, because I think that you could make the case that Dalton Pompey is a fit, but then again, you look at who's gotten the call. You might see Daryl Siciliani get the promotion maybe instead of or alongside Pompey.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that the club is really prioritized, and we're going to talk to Dalton Pompey later on in this very podcast, has really prioritized just consistency for Pompey and wanting him to be in one place, you know, because he hasn't, until this year, he never had one season at any stop of professional baseball, you know, not even the majors, not single A, nowhere, where he was just in a place for 1 year. Like, he's never had one full professional season in one place. And so, you know, that's kind of hindered his development probably a little bit. So I think that the club really wanted him to be settled in one place, getting regular at bats. I don't know. I feel like John Gibbons is really going to want the speed element that Dalton Pompey brings, you know, not just in September, but potentially even in October.
Yeah, and we saw the difference that Pompey can make with his legs. I mean, those stolen bases in Kansas City didn't end up coming around to score, but he put himself in position to really score a game-changing run for the Blue Jays. And I think that that's the kind of impact he could make and could make if he's on the team again this year. But the one thing I wonder about is, I mean, they've had chances to call him up this year. They've gone to Junior Lake and Siciliani, and never have they called on Pompey. So, it, you know, maybe that's because they wanted him to develop. But, you know, on the other hand, if they felt his talent was so overwhelmingly ready for the major leagues, they had their chances to call him up.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that it is. I think that's part of that consistency, and that's part of the Blue Jays wanting him to be in one place this year.
Yeah, and that does make sense, especially for some of these guys. I mean, they made it to the major leagues so quickly, and then you end up skipping some development, and it's pretty rare that you have someone like a Roberto Osuna who's able to essentially skip the upper minors and get away with it. For the most part, you don't get away with that kind of a jump.
In terms of infielders, I guess the names that you would hear would be, Andy Burns or, Matt Dominguez, Chris Colabello. How do you feel that's going to shake out?
I don't see him calling up Colabello. Do you agree with me on that one?
Before his return, I would have said yes, but I mean, he just has not been hitting at all in Buffalo. Yeah. And I wonder how that's changed it.
Right. And even though he's on the 40-man roster, I mean, all the guys that you mentioned are on the 40-man roster, which kind of greases the skids a little bit for those guys, just because it's not like they have to displace anyone to get that promotion. But I don't know. Colabello, like, I just am not convinced, just on the basis that he's not necessarily hitting in AAA. And so if he's not hitting there, why are you expecting that he's going to hit in the majors?
Absolutely. No, yeah, I certainly, my thinking on that has shifted since, just seeing the results in Colabello. And who knows, maybe the Blue Jays have, guys down there watching him who are saying, like, look, this guy's taking good swings, he's making good contact, he's just, getting BABIPed or whatever it is, or he's been unlucky here and there. Like, that could very well be the case. I haven't watched his at-bats, but the numbers don't exactly sing his praises right now.
Yeah, and it's a relatively small sample, so maybe he's just lining into outs and hitting rockets at gloves, or maybe he's not going to be a member of this 2016 team from here on. And, at a certain point, you wonder, change of scenery guy. I mean, you wonder if he's not called up in September, maybe that's something they look at in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he's not coming up in September, I can't imagine he's coming back in 2017.
Yeah. It's at a certain point you cycle through those 40-man roster spots and you start looking at ways to maybe find an opportunity for someone where, you can potentially get a fresh start. But who knows? Maybe 24 hours from now we'll all be surprised and he'll be on the Blue Jays roster again.
Quickly to finish up here, Aaron Sanchez starts tonight. It's going to be interesting to see, just how he looks after a pretty extended time off, and spent his time throwing side sessions and conditioning down in Dunedin. So that's gonna be really interesting to see how does his performance tonight kind of affect what the Blue Jays are gonna do with him going forward.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that with Sanchez, he's probably gonna end up looking pretty good. I mean, just based on what we've seen from him this year, every time he goes out there, I'm expecting him to pitch well, and I think that's a reflection of just how well he's done so far this year. But at some point they're going to have to find ways to rest him, I would think, because he's at 156 innings now. If you're expecting to make a deep playoff run and say that's another 20 or 20 plus innings, well, all of a sudden you're pushing up toward 200. And so I think at a certain point you're going to look at backing off in September, even if he's one of your best starters, even if he's one of the best starters in the American League, because otherwise I don't see a way to manage those innings in a way where his workload is increasing by an amount you're comfortable with.
You want to have the flexibility of, if you make a deep playoff run, being able to use Aaron Sanchez as much as you'd like in the postseason. So that's in a DS, in a CS, and perhaps even in a World Series. So I think you're right. I think they definitely have to skip another Sanchez start at some point, and they can do that with, the Blue Jays have three more off days, so it's doable. Maybe they have to think about skipping two starts.
Yeah, I wonder if they have to do that, because otherwise, you end up in a situation where maybe you're pushing up close to 180 by the time you're done the regular season, maybe even beyond that, and then you get into a tricky territory in October. But I think you've made the point before that once you actually get to October, it's probably not that hard to manage innings, relatively speaking. I mean, you know exactly when the games are going to be. You know roughly you're looking at one start per series potentially, maybe a little bit more than that. So the challenge, I think, at that point becomes even a bit manageable.
All right, well, we're going to let you go. Ben, thanks for joining us from Baltimore. We'll be reading your stuff on sportsnet.ca. We'll be looking for you on the pregame show. Enjoy Camden Yards. She said no biggie, territorial enough to try to build a wall around the whole city. There he goes. Thrown out to Rose. Not in time. Stolen base in a blink. What a money bag. And again, the element of surprise, I don't think anybody anticipated going. Look, Davis has got a high leg kick. He's going to deliver his pitch. And I love the aggressiveness. Don Pompey, straight steal, not thinking about anything but getting that bag. That is a money bag. Continues on at the letters, Arden Zwelling on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Very pleased to be joined over the phone by Buffalo Bisons outfielder Dalton Pompey. Dalton, thanks for joining us. You know, it's no secret that it's the last day of August and MLB rosters expand tomorrow. I'm just curious if the organization has told you anything about what's going to be happening to you over the next month.
No, not really. I haven't really talked to anybody about it. You know, my coach is here just telling me to be prepared for, you know, whatever happens next. And, you know, they tell all of us that because they're just as clueless as we are as well.
Obviously, you got to, you know, be a September call-up last year. You were on the postseason roster, got a, you know, just a taste of what that's like. You know, just if you were to be a call-up, I mean, how much are you looking forward to getting back to a major league environment?
Oh, I'm extremely excited to hopefully have that opportunity again. I mean, you don't really understand how great it is until, you know, you're in that role and then it's taken away from you for such a long period of time. So, I mean, it's something that I'm really looking forward to. I kind of understand from last year, if I did get called up, what my role would be. So it's a little easier to, you know, step into and understand. But it's definitely an exciting time for the team, and you know, any way I could help the team get to back to the playoffs would be great.
I don't know if a lot of people understand what you've been through this year. You know, you come out of spring training with turf toe, and then you jammed your heel, and you had a knee injury after that, and then you had a really serious concussion trying to make a catch along the wall in left field. I mean, how much of a challenge have the injuries been this season?
Yeah, I mean, the whole year as a whole has been, you know, pretty frustrating for me. You know, with the injuries that I've had to deal with, you know, especially early on, it was really hard for me to find any sort of consistency in my game. But, I mean, I just had to keep grinding. I feel like, you know, those are kind of things that I really couldn't avoid. You know, I was trying to play hard and, you know, things happened that I couldn't really avoid. So I just had to deal with it. And, you know, coming back, you know, it's been tough. It's been tough, but I've just tried to look at all the positives and everything. And, you know, I'm happy, you know, how the year actually ended up, because, you know, I had to fight, and this is probably one of the first times in my career that I had to really fight.
It's funny you say that, because I was going to go there next. You know, people will say, they'll tell you learn a lot more about yourself from failure than from success. And, you know, a lot of big league players will tell you that. And, you know, I'm just curious about what you've learned, you know, going through the first year in your career where you've really had to face adversity and where you've really had to fight for it.
You know, I just, like I said, I just had to try to remain positive. There's times where, you know, I was really, you know, down on myself, you know, questioning a lot of things, you know, in regards to, you know, getting called up and, you know, my overall performance. And, you know, sometimes I even felt like I was overthinking things. And, you know, my whole life I've been kind of like a thinker. And, you know, sometimes that helps me and sometimes that hurts me. But, you know, through it all, like I've, with the support of my family and, you know, my girlfriend and my brother and, you know, some of my friends giving me a lot of positive reinforcement. They've been able to help me, you know, get through those times. And, you know, looking back on what happened this year and, you know, not being completely where I want to be, you know, I can, you know, years that are coming up, I can, you know, look back on these times and remember how I got through them. And, you know, they're not going to be, you know, as bad.
I know some of the Blue Jays kind of development types, Tim Raines or Gil Kim, even Ross Atkins, have kind of been in your ear all year and have been checking in with you on your progress, your development. I mean, what kind of things have they been telling you about this season?
They've been really stressing my routine and me preparing myself to get ready, for games and kind of being consistent with what I do every single day in terms of, what I do in batting practice, what I do in the field during batting practice, what I do when I first show up to the field, what I do pregame, what I do during the game. Just trying to be consistent with that because they understand that the results can always vary, but I'm basically trying to put myself in the best possible, situation to succeed. So, that was pretty much what they harped on me, the whole year.
That said, I mean, what parts of your game do you think you've kind of taken the biggest strides in this year?
I mean, definitely my whole, defensive preparation. I've really gotten used to, playing all three outfield positions. I mean, I played right field for the first time a couple of days ago, but I've been, taking balls off the bat in all three. There's definitely more of a comfort factor because of the way that I'm preparing myself before the game in the outfield. Hitting too, I think I've made strides as a hitter as well. I mean, even though my results aren't where they wanted to be, I was able to experiment and try different things, and kind of leave my comfort zone of what I've been doing, for the past, 3 or 4 years. And just try different stuff and see, if something might have clicked, is then great. And then if not, then I can move on. But, talking to some of my teammates here, they always told me, hey, like, try this. Well, what do you have to lose, right? And sometimes great things are found from leaving your comfort zone. So I'm definitely happy I left my comfort zone and tried some different things.
When you're talking about that kind of experimentation, are you referring to kind of mechanics or to your approach, or what do you mean by that?
It's more so like, mechanical stuff and then approach. Because I mean, I pretty much have my approach that I want to take, on certain pitchers. Maybe like a couple games I tried lowering my hands, a couple games I tried toe tapping, a couple games I tried no striding, just stuff like that, because I always knew that, okay, I can always go back to what I was doing before, because that's right. What I know. But, you never know. I could become more consistent at doing maybe something else. And that's something that I was basically trying out the last, 3 weeks of the season, just to see what could come of it. I mean, by the results, I mean, it didn't really work out, but I'm happy that I tried some different stuff and know that I can always go back to what I was doing before, because that's what made me pretty successful.
I can only imagine how tough that is as a switch hitter as well, seeing both sides of, seeing guys throwing at you with both arms. And this year you've had more success against righties, but obviously you see them a lot more. I mean, are you kind of making those kind of little tweaks on both sides of the plate, and is it kind of changing from at bat to at bat?
It's one of the toughest things for me mentally to deal with is the switch hitting, is because, a lot of guys in the big leagues, only hit from one side and they only have to focus on being great from one side. But for me, it's hard for me to be great from both sides, but I could be good from both just because I have to focus my time, on two different things. So, I've tried to make tweaks and, I go through stretches where, I'll hit better from one side and then I won't from the other, and then vice versa. I mean, it's a little easier for me to hit better left-handed just because I face more, right-handed pitchers. But yeah, it's just, it's been ongoing for my whole life. I mean, it's not easy, but it's kind of, the life that I chose. So
when I saw you in Buffalo earlier this year, it was right after Devin Travis came through, and you were talking about how, he's a guy that just kind of does things the right way, comes to the ballpark with same attitude every day, same work ethic, same energy. Is that something you've been working on this year?
Yeah. With the help of my other teammates that are there as well too, just trying to be, you know, a better teammate, trying to focus on, you know, the little things in, off the field that can help me be a better person and a better, you know, a player as well. You know, with the help of, you know, Devin Travis, and hopefully if I get called up, I'm definitely going to spend a lot more time with him because I know how much he helps me. But even guys like Dominic Brown who are here, Chris Colabello, you know, guys that have been around a little bit, they kind of show me the way and show me how to, you know, act and carry myself and prepare myself each and every day. So I feel like I'm a totally different guy, you know, with the help of those guys.
It's interesting you mention Dom Brown because, you know, he's had kind of a similar career. Obviously, he's older than you, but, you know, he was kind of – he was you before you were you in a way, you know, coming out of high school and kind of a highly touted outfield prospect. I mean, what can you learn from a guy like that?
I mean, whatever he tells me, I pretty much listen to because everything he tells me, he said, hey, you don't think I've been through this before? You know, he always refers to that because I feel like everything he's gone through is what I'm going through now. So, I mean, in terms of anything, whether it's, you know, dealing with fans, dealing with failure, dealing with when you do succeed, dealing with leaving your comfort zone, just stuff like that, you know, anything. Even if I ask him in a question, you know, he'll answer me truthfully. And, you know, he's been a big help with me all year. And obviously, a lot of the guys on the team haven't had, you know, seasons that they're, you know, really proud of. But, I mean, at the end of the day, off the field stuff, you know, it's been great for me. Just learning and being around these guys and kind of taking ownership of my own career and trying to make any strides that I can in a positive direction.
And, you know, finally, I'm sure it's hard to kind of remember what it was like last year because you go through everything this year and you don't have the season that you want to have and you're not where you want to be and all this. And I'm sure it can be hard to kind of get into that mindset that you were in last year when you came up and, you know, all of a sudden you're in Kansas City and it's, you know, the, you know, top of the ninth and you're stealing bases and stuff. But do you kind of, you know, foresee something similar happening this year where, you know, all of a sudden in 48 hours or whatever, you could be in a playoff race or you could be playing in a DS?
Yeah, I mean, I do think of that. I feel like anybody would. It's one of those things, though, too, where I'm still in Buffalo, so I'm trying to not get my hopes up, per se, because, I mean, you truly just never know. But, I mean, once if I do get the call up, I mean, my mindset's just going to completely change. Now I'm going to be focused on, okay, what are they doing? What do I need to do to help them? But I mean, right now it's kind of like, okay, I'm still in Buffalo. I have a game tonight at 7. I need to prepare for that and kind of just go from there. But if I do get called up, I mean, I'll definitely be excited. And those thoughts of what happened last year will definitely, you know, flood my mind and it'll be a good time.
Of course. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. Wishing you all the best and maybe we'll be seeing you soon. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Arden.
All right, our thanks to Dalton Pompey for joining us over the phone from Buffalo. Always good to check in with Dalton and hear what's going on with him, and I have a feeling might be seeing him soon at the Rogers Center. Thanks to Ben Nicholson-Smith for calling in for Baltimore Rita's stuff on sportsnet.ca. And my thanks to Sam A. McKee, loyal producer, does a fine job as always. And our thanks to you, the listener, coming along with us. Thanks for listening. That's it for this week. On at the letter.